So when he kicked off the brakes and all of a sudden was zooming out down the runway and went airborne, what was going through your head and heart, maybe?
Well, another airplane completed. And I came back and I said, any squawks? He said, no. I went, amazing. So
what? How much testing did you do on it, Ray?
Quite a bit. We've done quite a bit of testing. Of course, he's been the only pilot always. I've taxied to the airplane, and so has Max Hodges. I don't know where he is. He's somewhere in here. I don't know where he is. He's one of our other pilots. He flies in the right-hand seat. And he's spent.
Can you fly this from the right seat?
This is
two controls.
The first 22 airplanes are full dual controlled. The only thing the person in the right seat cannot do is cannot put the landing gear up, and does not have aileron trim. He has everything else.
Oh. Well.
So now the 23rd airplane through the 272 had a large radar pod hanging under the middle. You see the big hook in the middle there?
Yeah.
That holds the radar pod. And he was a weapons systems officer, or a WISO, as we call them. In the right-hand seat, he had a radar screen. So he'd talk to the pilot and tell him where to shoot.
Right.
So, where to go. But one other thing we did, one of the big glitches that we had is when I was here a year ago, we watched the Tiger Cat have the wheel failure. Now, the two original wheels, and they're 3288 wheels, it's quite a rare wheel. There are no other new wheels existing anywhere in the world. So I had two wheels that were in real nice shape, and they were already had a yellow tag, and they were approved for flight, but they had microscopic little pits where the steel snap ring goes in to hold the wheel together. I looked at the Tiger Cat, had the wheel failure, and I went, huh. So I went around trying to find new wheels, couldn't find them. So I talked to a man, Chuck Wall in California, and he specializes in building wheels. So that took us 5 months and a couple dollars to get new wheels made. So that delayed our flight for 5 months.
We got to go fly with a B-29, which was, I think, what most people wanted to see while they were here. But I had a great view of it because we went and did a photo shoot with the B-29. But
and with B-20, did you take some stills in the car?
Of course.
Of course, good. Okay.
Yeah, no, it was great. No, the photographers did. I've already seen one picture. I think they put it out on the EA website, and it's a beautiful shot. It's very unique.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Riley and Ray Fowler. And now, welcome Sam Bass. 50 years of safe flying, over 35,000 hours in the cockpit. Ray's going to come out and start talking details of the airplane with these two gentlemen. Ray.
Well, we really don't have too much to say because you've covered it very well. You've done a great job there. But, Ray, now the airplane was designed, as you said, to go along for the B-29 in Tokyo. And it obviously missed that. And it actually, the only combat was in Korea. How do you feel that it served that purpose in Korea?
I think it served it unbelievably well, except for it was designated as a night fighter. So, you know, when I'm flying it in the day, which is interesting, I cannot imagine strapping this thing on at night and flying it as a night fighter. And I think a lot of the combat losses were just controlled flight into terrain, where you can imagine raging around in the hills in Korea, you know, at nighttime trying to do good work. But the one thing I will say, and this is interesting about this airplane and for all the multi-engine pilots out there, when they made the change of the firewall switch when the airplane would not fly. So originally, the engineers figured out, you know, I'm sure it was quite embarrassing whenever they went down the runway and pulled back on the original prototype and it would not fly. They got the bright idea just to move firewall forward. They just took one engine to the left, the other one to the right, which basically turned it into a totally different docile airplane. So like Tom was talking about, both engines rotate in. So really, effectively, it removes and makes it almost centerline thrust. So I wouldn't have believed it if I haven't done it in this airplane. But everybody asks, it's obviously very high performance, but what's the blue line? So what can you fly with one engine or one engine shut down? This airplane, you can have one engine at full power. You can have the other one windmilling, not even feathered, and you can go full stalls. which so there is no blue line. It will stall well before, and it's very docile. In fact, when you're coming downhill, if you lose an engine, you probably never even know it. So when we've done the engine shutdowns, you put very little bit of rudder trim. It's just a very docile airplane for that reason. In fact, whenever you're going around corners, it more pulls you forward than any asymmetry on the taxi. So just an unbelievably unique airplane in that regard.
And I've known Ray maybe since he was 18 years old. He knocked on my door one time, and he was trying to get next door to get his first Warbird ride. But anyway, Ray, now I know that you did a lot of preparation before this first flight, and you being a close friend of Bud, I'm sure you called him. What did Bud tell you?
It's funny. Well, I think most people have heard the story. So I asked Bud his impressions of the XP-82. And, of course, his impression was it's one of the worst fighters ever built. And, of course, he's comparing that against the P-51, which is so nimble. This airplane was really designed to do one thing really well, which was go long distances, and it's such a heavy airplane with the internal fuel. So he's also comparing this airplane. This one is built just like the XP-82, so all the improvements that went from the XP into the F-82s with the hydraulically boosted controls. They gave some improvements on the hydraulic system for the accumulator. So Tom has stayed pretty much totally pure to this airplane in the way it would have flown as the XP program flew, to include certain things other than the avionics. He did give me a really nice GPS so I don't get lost. So that's embarrassing. But it flies. What you see is pretty much exactly how you would have seen it as it flew as an XP-82.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, both of you. It's been a great pleasure just to listen to it. And we've got a little time here for some questions and answers. Anybody up there? I'm sure there's lots of people. Well, just a minute. He'll give you a mic.
I think, Tom, you had mentioned at one time the woman wouldn't sell you the plane, or I don't know what happened to the parts. So you came back and bought something, but she said she had sold it. Whatever happened to that parts of the Mustang 82?
The first project that you weren't able to buy from Walter, where did the first project go?
Oh, the first project went to Pat Herker right there. Yeah. Put your hand up. He has the E model right there. This is the second project I had, which... No, none of us knew that it existed.
Over here.
Good morning. I'd like to say thank you for bringing this wonderful airplane out. It's probably the coolest thing, in my opinion, that's here right now. So thanks again for the effort that goes into, you know, keeping these things flying. My question is in regards to the single-engine Mustangs. Is there a reason North American changed the glove angle on the later Mustangs as compared to the earlier ones?
Are you talking about the H model? So this was actually patterned after the H model. So if you saw the H, if it's still here, in fact, it was on the alley.
It's down there.
Yeah, so you've got to look at that airplane. I think that's the only one flying, or H. There's like one or two that fly. So there were improvements. I think what makes a Mustang really look sexy, the lines and everything else, they kind of took all that out of the H model. So the H is an unbelievable performer because it's so much lighter. But it, you know, again, that one looks a lot better than the H, but this was patterned after the H model. Now, why they took that out, engineering, I'm sure it's probably a little more efficient. This was really a high-altitude, high-speed escort airplane. There's probably some efficiencies in there that they did that, but that's a smart engineer question.
Next.
Is this the first fighter to have all metal control surfaces?
I don't know.
Think so.
So with the P-51, you know, they had a harmonic. They actually had one on the early P-51s. They tested it with a metal rudder. And if you can, when you're flying next to it, you'll see the rudder moving. So there's a harmonic that sets up with this airplane that I'm assuming that they don't have on this one. But it is smaller, but you have two of them. So it's quite effective. They work really well.
Over here first.
How does this compare flying the P-38, which is twin engine?
That's a real good question. So the P-38 is a totally different animal. I would say the visibility is a lot better out of this airplane than the P-38. That is the one airplane that both engines rotate out, so both engines are critical, but also a very big. The P-38 is a fighter, but it flies much like a B-25. In fact, when you get in that airplane, it feels like and it's a very heavy airplane to fly. But this one, I would say, is easier to fly than a P-38, particularly The way that they manage the fuel system in that airplane, there's some other issues with that that make that a little more challenging than this airplane. They had got this one figured out. They had put a lot more technology into, which would be, you know, later 40s technology into this airplane to fly into the 50s.
That's one other thing that, as a matter of fact, is we text Ray the other night. We were talking about minimum control speed in the air, which Tom would be very familiar with. Almost every multi-engine airplane, it has some minimum control speed that you have to be above that if you lose an engine that you're able to control the airplane. Ray texted us back and he says it doesn't have any VMCA. And I had never heard.
And the P-38 certainly does.
And I had never heard of a multi-engine airplane that didn't have that.
Yeah.
Now we have another question here.
I actually had the same question about how it performs compared to a P-38. So instead, I'll just ask, what's the fastest you've had it?
So this one we've had a little over 400. You know, and I've had the same with the P-38, well, over 400. You know, this one I've had to over 500. So it'll effortlessly go to 505 miles an hour. The biggest thing too, we talk about the. Like Bud talking about this airplane being so heavy to fly. So, you know, whenever Pat has his airplane flying, he'll have the hydraulics in it. And so I'm sure it'll be a lot more finger light, you know, for a 19,000-pound airplane, which is still relatively light compared when they put the tanks and they put the bombs and put the rockets. And I bet it was a total pig back in Korea whenever they would load it with a combat load. But if you turn the hydraulics off in the P-38, it turns from a fighter into a dump truck, basically, to go fly. So, you know, much like this airplane, too, it's just like your Cessna or Piper, it's cable-driven. So when you get into the P-51 after flying this one's quite light on the controls, as you can imagine. But this one is still, you know, very honest. You know, I take off, I turn it loose, and when I'm taking my pictures, and it kind of flies itself.